On this episode of the Miller Podcast, we'll be talking about everything Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Straight spoilers. Let's go. Alright, yo, what's going on? It's your boy CJ Mello here on a new episode of the Mello Podcast. How's everybody doing out there in the podcasting listening world? I hope everybody had a phenomenal weekend. It is Monday morning right now. I just dropped off the kids in school, walked the dog, you know. Now, this is going to be a spoiler heavy. I'm telling you right now, spoiler heavy podcast about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, y'all. For real. That movie was, you had highs, you had lows, you had mids, you got circles, you had squares, emotions, literally. If you feel you're not an emotional person, and this movie doesn't bring out some, even a little bit of emotion out of you, you might have a problem. I'm just saying. I know a lot about people out there, they don't have I don't cry, I don't tear for anything. But if you've seen all these Guardians movies, you've seen every, like, all three of them, all the Marvel stuff, you see what happens in this movie, you should at least felt something. Like, damn, what? But anyway, we're just going to get into it. All right, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, to me, was, out of all three, one was still number one, but then you got two. I mean, you got Volume 3 and then Volume 2 after that. I don't feel Volume 2 was all that. It was good, but because it gave us a Mantis and, like, story building with Nebula and Gamora. But besides that, I feel 3 tops 2 easy. Basically, it starts off, I hope I don't take 2 hours to explain this because that's how long the movie was. Also, there's 2 post-credit scenes. Starts off with basically showing where Rocket came from. A big hand, which we've seen in trailers, a big hand trying to grab a raccoon from a cage. And then it kicks back to Rocket in present time using Peter's Walkman, singing a song. I don't know what the song is. I'm sorry, anybody out there. He's just walking through nowhere, which is now considered the Guardians' new headquarters, the whole planet, or whatever you want to call it, of nowhere. And then he's just walking. And you slowly see Nebula and Groot putting up a sign in, like, alien language. Clearly, it says Guardians of the Galaxy. And then you see, I forgot what Drax and Mantis were doing. I'm going to be honest with you. That scene with them two kind of is like, woof. But anyways, you see Rocket just keep walking into what looks like an empty bar. And you see Quill just drunk out of his mind. And keeps calling Rocket a raccoon. And Rocket literally says, dude, I'm not a raccoon. That comes full circle towards the end, by the way. Rocket gets a drink. He tries to take his Walkman from Rocket. And then Peter just collapses. And then Nebula comes in, gives like a sigh, like, oh my god. Picks Peter up. You just hear Drax say, again? And everybody's like, oh god. Then we see Kraglin too. I think it's cool. We get Kraglin back in this, if you remember from the end of the second one. Yondu died. Spoiler. It shouldn't be a freaking spoiler. Yondu died in the second one. Kraglin took Yondu's little whistle spear thing, which that also comes full circle, which I think is freaking awesome. Kraglin wrecked with that spear, little spear head thing. And basically, it's just Nebula, which clearly you can tell. Nebula, out of any character, I feel, in this 3 movies, obviously, you know, Nebula has had the most full circle moment. I'm going to say it now. Nebula basically becomes Gamora, while Gamora is Nebula from the first one, if you know what I mean. You know, if you understand that, then you understand what I'm saying. But anyways, Nebula carries Peter to, like, the med bay on the ship, and basically she heals him up, puts him to bed kind of thing, because he also fell pretty hard. And then next scene, you know, I know I'm going to be skipping a couple things for the most part. We see the High Evolutionary, No, that's a lie. That's a lie. Next scene we see randomly out of nowhere, by the way, is the great Adam Warlock, which I feel Adam Warlock was very useful in this movie to where he needed to be. But he was definitely like a child in this movie. The High Priestess, if that was her name, I don't remember if that was her name. It's crazy that the High Evolutionary basically created the galaxy. If you think about it. Because he says, in the movie, he's like, I create things that are not perfect. I recreate them and destroy the world that they were in. Which is, again, that comes back full circle too, which is crazy to me. But yeah, Adam Warlock comes in. He's literally going to attack Rocket. And then, as you know, it's a battle scene. Everybody starts fighting Adam Warlock, beating his ass down. Kraven tries to use his whistle to use this little spear thing, but he doesn't know how to use it still. We see Cosmo, too. I think Cosmo's kind of cute and funny. The dynamic between Kraglin and Cosmo is awesome. I feel like there's a scene where Kraglin says to Cosmo, bad dog. And Cosmo is like, huh? Wait, what? It's like, take that back. No, you got to take that back. He's like, nope, I'm not taking it back. And that's another thing. Almost everything in the beginning of the movie comes back full circle towards the end of the movie. It's actually pretty awesome how they do it. Yeah, so Adam Warlock comes. Basically, he's trying to collect Rocket because the High Evolutionary wants Rocket back, realizing the only creature that he modified or created was the smartest as him was Rocket. Because they show, it's kind of sad, really. They kind of show how Rocket is being dissected on, reconstructed, metal put into his body, wiring and all that stuff, how he learned how to talk and stuff like that. And it's kind of sad. That's one of the scenes I feel that got people like, yo, that's fucked up. I saw a thing on Twitter earlier or yesterday. It was like, for the most part, this movie's not meant for kids if they love animals. And if you're an animal lover, you're going to feel like this movie's not for kids. Because they definitely fucking do animals, at least the four main animals that we see, they do them dirty. They do them dirty, bro. But this movie's basically is a Rocket movie. I think we all knew that. Because even James Gunn was saying, it's a Rocket movie. We get to learn about Rocket. Here, another thing James Gunn, I love that what he said was, the first movie was about the mother. Peter dealing with his mother. Right? The second movie was about the father. Essentially, Peter dealing with his father. But then the third movie, it says it was about dealing with yourself. Which you also see that, again, towards the end of the movie. Basically, learning how to deal with your past and just pushing through, learning how to be your own person without having your past in the back of you or holding you down, kind of thing. Which is, I feel, what this movie was about. Letting your past go or dealing with your past first to letting it go. That way you feel like, ha, I can start my own life, my own person, so to speak. But yeah, so back to the Guardians beat down Adam Warlock. Adam Warlock beat everybody's ass. Like, legit. You thought Drax was going to die first. Legit, I thought Drax was dying right off the rip. And I want to say another thing. All right, there were a couple podcasts I did the trailer reviews for Guardians of the Galaxy. I got to apologize. I was so wrong about anybody dying. I'm going to tell you right now, nobody dies. We had a very, very close call with Rocket, but nobody dies. I thought Drax was going to die first because he got hurt. With shot something at him. I don't remember. But Drax got pretty hurt. Nebula, you know, she's metal, so she's like reconstructed herself. Like a transformer. Robots meets the eyes kind of thing. But then Nebula kind of made like a heat sword and like struck it right through Warlock's body. It didn't kill Warlock, but it affected him bad enough that he had to retreat. But before all that, I know I'm bouncing around. Sorry, that's gonna happen here. But before that, he hurt Rocket really bad. Like, I forgot what, either he shot him with something or he stabbed him with something. I'm trying to remember it. I wish I did this review like on Friday or on Saturday, cause my mind would have been way more fresher. Yeah, it's just, you thought we were going to lose Rocket off rip, basically. Adam Warlock disappears because Kraken's like, wait, what the hell is that dude they just stabbed? And he's like, he looks up in the sky. Adam's flying away. And then basically Kraken's like, oh, this is not good. They go back to Rocket. They try to revive Rocket with like, seems like what the things the ambulances use. My God. The two-handed thing. Oh, my God. Why can I not remember what it's called? I feel like a dope right now. What is that thing called? But basically, they were trying to jumpstart Rocket again. But not realizing that, they didn't know that Rocket had a kill switch put in him. So if anyone did try to revive him, if he was about to die, they technically couldn't. Unless they had the key for the kill switch. And they put some metal electronic thing on his chest. Basically, they were killing him without knowing they were killing him. Luckily, Nebula can plug into almost any machine, it seems like. Who used to be able to do that? She's like a cyborg. She's literally cyborg for Marvel. She was basically reading Rocket's body. Basically, like saying, oh, it's like literally, you see it on the screen. She's plugged into Rocket and she's like reading his schematics of his body, basically. Like, oh, we have to go to this place to get his Orso Corp, something like that, scope. Like a laboratory. We have to go here to get Rocket's master key, essentially, so he doesn't die. And we can restart him the right way. So essentially, the movie, I would say, up till maybe the last half hour, not counting credits, was pretty much the whole thing was trying to get the key to revive Rocket. You know? And then we go. Now, after that whole sequence, they get on the ship. They go teleport to wherever the Auroscope. I feel so. Gosh, man. I feel like now I need to re-see this movie. And before that, we officially see the High Evolutionary. I may be skipping some parts here. And the High Priestess. I'm going to just call it High Priestess. The Golden Chick from Volume 2, basically. We see her, and I didn't even know this, but High Evolutionary, which is the same guy that played the boss in Peacemaker. I can't say his name. I'm not going to try to say anything. I'm not going to ruin his name. But I think he was awesome. As a villain, you could feel like you want to beat his ass. You want to beat his ass more than you want to beat Thanos' ass. You want to beat his ass more than you want to beat Eagle's ass. Or Ronan the Conqueror's ass. Legit. I want to hurt the High Evolutionary more for what he did to Rocket, to all the animals, and to the planet. Or a planet, or lots of planets, so to speak. But anyways, he walks. We see High Priestess holding Adam Warlock. I'm almost like, am I be okay, Mom? Mommy, something like that. Or Mother, because he's British. So I think he said Mother. And then High Evolutionary walks in. The High Priestess is like, oh, we need to fix him. He can get the job done. And she's like, High Evolution's like, asks the High Priestess. I know my mind's going everywhere. Sorry. I'm trying to literally recall that scene. High Evolution asks the High Priestess, did he get it? And High Priestess is like, no, he didn't. But he will, though. He just needs to be refixed and recharged and all that stuff. He's so imperfect. But and then Lucia is like, well, you took him out of his pod early. And he's like, High Evolutionary is like, no, I didn't. Even if I took him out later on, it's still the same thing. It's a malfunction of how I made him. And then he looks at the High Priestess, grabs her face like, and most of your people are probably not perfect either. So I'm like, oh, wait, he made her? So everybody that's her on her planet, her people, have been made by the High Evolutionary. What? That blew my mind instantly. I'm like, wait, what? So he created her? Which means, technically, he created Adam Warlock. Essentially. You know? Basically, High Evolutionary is like Thanos. He wants to create a perfect, except Thanos wants to create a better world by eliminating half the universe that was, I guess, so to speak, imperfect. While High Evolutionary will destroy all the universe until everything is perfect. But yet, the High Evolutionary is not perfect at all. He's imperfect in his own being because he's trying to create perfect people, which, as we all know, there's no such thing as a perfect person. So, yeah. So, the Guardians... we also have to go back to the flashbacks that Rocket... We're having with Rocket, too. So, we started learning about Rocket's history, where he came from. One spoiler, at the beginning of... towards the end of the movie... Rocket finds a cage just like he was in before he got mutated. And he sees where he's coming. It literally says, from North America. So, I mean, we already knew Rocket was from us, from our world, so to speak. And then he finds out what he is. Which I think is awesome what he says at the end of the movie. It's like, yeah, you solidified yourself, bro. But we kind of get Rocket's story. Like, we see how he was made. I'm going to fast forward a little bit and then kind of cut back between this whole Rocket story. I'm just trying to get the Rocket thing in one spot that we have to keep going back and forth. Like I said, we see him get grabbed in the beginning of the movie. And then you see him get brought over, essentially get mutated. Get thrown into a cage. He starts shaking. And then we start slowly meeting three other characters that essentially become his best friends. That, spoiler, they all die. Earlier I said nobody dies. Those characters die. Because we don't ever see them again. So we meet P13, which is Rocket, obviously. And I don't know what the other numbers were for the rabbit. I want to say squirrel, but I know that's not a squirrel. I don't know what Lila was. Seal, maybe? Otter? Otter. Yes, Lila was an otter. Lila the otter. And the walrus. He meets three friends. And Rocket's scared. In this cage, he doesn't know what's going on, and Lila's like, "It's okay, friend." They don't even have names yet. Like, "It's okay, friend. We're gonna be okay," because the High Evolutionary promised them a new world where they thought they were gonna live in. But later on in the movie, the High Evolutionary tells Rocket, "Like, you're not living in no new world. What are you talking about? You're an imperfection." For me to perfect the real perfections that I'm putting into this new world. You were never going to go into this new world. But basically, the otter is named Lila. The walrus is named... oh my God. Why? Can I remember the freaking walrus's name? I know the rabbit... It was like a crab. They transformed the rabbit basically into like a crab with like giant chomper style teeth. He called himself Teefs. T-E-F-S. Lila the Otter. Oh my gosh, what is the walrus's name? I'm angry at myself right now. I have seen this hundreds of times, at least millions of times in the last 3 days. Lila Teef's Rocket. Lila Teef's Rocket. Oh my gosh. Please give me a second while I look this up real quick. I feel like an idiot. Lila Rocket Teef's. Lila Rocket Teef's. Lila Rocket Teef's. Lila Rocket Teef's. Dude, are you kidding me? Floor. Wait, floor? Okay, sure, floor. I think because basically, in a sense, they gave the walrus wheels. It looked like he was in a wheelchair, essentially. But they all named themselves, thinking they're gonna be in the new world. And they're all like, "Wait, what are you gonna name yourself, friend?" Talking to Rocket, and Rocket's. But before that scene, Rocket was with the High Evolutionary, because the High Evolutionary was praising him, like, because realizing that Rocket's probably the smartest creature he's ever mutated / created. And then Rocket sees something fly. He starts looking into the new world, and Rocket sees something in the blue sky, because Rocket's like, blue. And the evolutionary is like, yeah, it's the sky. And he's like, and then Rocket sees something flying in the air, and he asks the evolutionary, what's that? And the evolutionary is like, oh, that's a rocket. And Rocket's like, rocket. And then, like I said, fast forward a little bit, probably like 2 or 3 minutes later, after that scene, Rocket, they ask Rocket, friend, what's your new name going to be in the new world, friend? And Rocket's like, I want to be in the sky. I want to fly. I want to take you guys all flying, basically. And then he says his name. He's like, my name's going to be Rocket. And everybody's like, Rocket? Yeah, Rocket Lila Teef's Floor. And basically, they all become friends and cool like that. How the made Rocket feel, which I think that's how most evil people or people that like to control other people do. Made Rocket feel at home, happy, felt like he had someone that loved him, and then straight up just backstabbed him in the back, bro. He just straight up said, nope. Nope, you are not going anywhere. You are just a piece I made to better perfect everything else that I've made. Essentially. And basically, Rocket learns of this and tries to escape. But the High Evolutionary, not knowing how smart Rocket was, Rocket was collecting pieces to escape for a long time. And the moment Rocket learned of this, he started building himself a key, which is also the same key, I believe, that helps Rocket to get out of the jail. So Rocket does get out of the jail. High Evolutionary is not in his, has no mindset whatsoever. He knows that Rocket's extra smart. He knows he wants Rocket's brain, basically. That's all he wants. He don't care about the rest of Rocket's body. He realized how smart Rocket is. He wants to take everything that's in Rocket's brains and implement it to new beings or new people that he has trapped in the bottom of his ship. Which, by the way, his ship is basically a whole fucking planet. Excuse my language. I apologize. This movie, like I said, it's definitely, you feel bad for Rocket, how he came up. Now you kind of get the understanding of why Rocket has always been the way he was with people. With other people, creatures, anything. In the sense of, like, he never really cared about nobody, because nobody ever really cared about him, kind of thing. But like earlier, like I said also, James Gunn even said, My plan for Rocket was always to get to this. From the first movie to now, essentially it was in a way also Rocket's story building. And it's true, we kind of see, like with Groot, we'll see Groot build through 1, 2, 3 movies. We see Rocket build through the first three movies. We see Peter kind of build. Well, yeah, I would say the third one. He definitely evolved for the most part. Drax is Drax. I feel like nothing's different there. So he's not as a man. He'll protect the Guardians because they protected him. So that's kind of a different. Nebula, obviously the biggest story change in everything. But basically, High Evolutionary is not a very nice person. You understand where Rocket comes from. You really understand how much these Guardians actually truly love each other. They will do anything for each other. I mean, I guess you got that from the first one. Like at the end of the first one, they were willing to die for each other. And the stone, and the Infinity Stone, with Ronan, the Accuser. That's what it was, the Accuser, I think it was. But in this one, you really see their family. I mean, you kind of saw that in the holiday special, but I know I don't want to explain the whole movie. I know it's going to be spoiled. I said spoiler heavy, but I feel like this movie needs to be seen. I don't care how you see it. You go to a free website and see it, whatever. You go to theaters and see it, cool, do that too. But if you're going to see this movie, and if you're already an emotional person, you better bring some tissues with you, I feel like. I didn't cry, but I definitely felt that. I got a little teary-eyed with the Rocket scenes, thinking he was actually going to die. Because there's one scene where they got the key for Rocket to fix him, and they thought it wasn't working. And essentially, he was like 95% dead. Because it also went into like a white room where you saw Lila, Teefs, and Floor kind of walking like, oh, we're all here, friends. We're all here, Rocket. You can come with us. But Rocket's, we're all here. We're going to go play or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And Rocket's like, can I come too? I was like, yeah, you can. But not right now. You have work to do. Kind of thing. And all of a sudden, boom, Rocket pops up alive. And then the Master Key thing starts really working on Rocket, reviving him, working faster. It was like, yo, let's go, bro. Let's go. I know I'm skipping through probably some important scenes that I can't remember. We also do see Gamora, because Gamora is a big reason that they got to get into the High Evolutionary's laboratory and find his key. Because Peter Quill is still in love with Gamora. He's still trying to... Because, yeah, remember Endgame, we got the past Gamora from the first Guardians. Or even just before the first Guardians, really. Before she even ever met Peter Quill. And that Gamora from Endgame, for some reason, did not die. Which I still find weird. That she did not die. Yet Nebula died. The second Nebula. Not the new Nebula. The past Nebula. But yeah, we find out that Gamora is actually part of the Ravagers. Because, you know, Thanos is technically dead in this world, in this universe. She's part of the Ravagers. Gamora. Nebula calls Gamora for help without Peter's knowledge. Peter's surprised. Peter's still trying to change Gamora. Spoiler again. Gamora slightly does change towards the end of the movie. She becomes a bit nicer. Not as nice as she was like in the second movie. But she definitely becomes a lot nicer than she was in the beginning of the first one. But the whole time, Peter's just trying to change Gamora back to her old self. Like, he's like, we used to love each other. We would do anything for each other. I know you're not this person, but at one point towards the end of the movie, Peter just realizes it. You're not going to be my Gamora, but you're still Gamora. And Gamora kind of does change a new leaf, realizing that the High Evolutionary is a freaking psycho. You know what I'm saying? Like a freaking psycho. That's what he is. He's a psycho. I feel like I don't want to make this an hour-long podcast, so I feel like I'm like cutting through stuff. Essentially, Gamora turns a new leaf. She helps the Guardians because she realizes that, wait, the High Evolution is destroying a world that he created, that he thought was a perfect world. But he's like, nah, this ain't no perfect world. I'm going to have to destroy this world so I can create anything else and stuff like that. We get a lot of different story arcs that kind of come to a close in this movie. Everybody realizes their parts in a way in this movie. Everybody realizes what their worth is. Basically, I'm going to fast forward a little bit here. The higher evolutionary is an asshole. He basically kills also the High Priestess, Adam Warlock's mummy, which I think in a way Adam Warlock wants to get back at him for that. Oh, also a big part. He has kids trapped. He made children and trapped them in the bottom of his ship, which I feel is kind of weird. I feel like that means something. I don't know why. My mind's thinking like that's a signal, a symbol for something. I don't know why I'm thinking that, but the Guardians realize this and like, we can't let, I think it was Drax that realized we cannot leave these kids here. We cannot leave anything here. And we learned that Drax knew how to, these kids were speaking a language that nobody understood. But later on we find out that Drax understands these kids and helps them essentially escape. It talks to them. And I love the fact that by the end of this movie, we learn that Drax, I love what Nebula says to Drax. Nebula says to Drax, Drax, you were never meant to be Drax the Destroyer. You were always meant to be Drax the Dad. That's like, yo, that's like, and you can see it in Drax's face, like, thank you. It made Drax feel great. Made him feel awesome that he said that. That Nebula said that to him. And it's kind of, if you really think about it, it's true. Because through all three movies, Drax always brought up his daughter. Always. You know? It was like, huh. When we actually get to see Drax in play with kids. And we realize, this dude is a great... The only reason he suddenly became Drax the Destroyer, and I'm going through the movies, not the comics, is because Ronan killed his family. But before that, there was no such thing as Drax the Destroyer. He was just Drax, the dad. But the fact that they brought kids back into it, essentially, now Drax essentially is going to become a father figure to, I feel it's like 100 kids, which to me is crazy. And by the way, one of these kids, I feel if they choose to keep her for the next couple of years, is a major part of if they make a Guardians 4, which there could be a Guardians 4, maybe even a TV show. All depends if Bradley Cooper wants to keep going and if Vin Diesel wants to keep going. I feel like. Because I think Sean Gunn, Craglin, I don't think he can do it. He can keep going, but I don't think he should. What else? What else? You also see, we're just going to fast forward to the end. I wish I had somebody else doing this because I think it would go back, it would go by a lot smoother if I had a second person. I feel like I'm talking, I feel like I barely cracked the movie when I first started talking about it. I was probably only in the first like 20 to 30 minutes of the movie. So I started jumping around and stuff. But we'll just go to the end. Essentially, the Guardians break up. They kill the High Evolutionary. Again, back to that part where I said Rocket went to go save other creatures and he found a cage with other raccoons in it. He opens the cage and there's like a little sign saying where they're from. Again, it says North America and it says species and it says raccoon. So technically, obviously, he's a raccoon. He's always been called a raccoon. But just before the High Evolution, like, you think you can get away from me? You belong to me. You're mine. Like, you will never get away from me. I own you. Rocket's like, no, man, you don't own me. Hylos is whipping his butt all the way around. Guardians start smacking him. Guardians come back for Rocket because they were not going to leave Rocket alone and let him die on a ship that was literally blowing up. They all start beating down on the High Evolutionary. And basically, the last thing Rocket says, or one of the last things, is, oh my god. I forgot what the High Evolution says to him, but basically, my name is Rocket. Rocket Raccoon. It was like, yo, let's go. He said it finally. And he basically just like blows up the High Evolutionary. But then we also learn what Rocket did to him earlier in the movie, the flashback, when after High Evolution killed Tief's, Floor, and Lila, Rocket went psycho and literally destroyed the face of the High Evolutionary. And basically, if you watch the whole movie, you see like High Evolutionary's face like weirdly stretched out. Like, why is his face stretched out like that? Then you learn at the end that Rocket fucked up his face. And he was wearing like a fake face to cover his literally just blood and skull. That's all you see is just a bloody face with just a skull. And it's talking. Like, again, if you don't want kids, if your kids are not good with, like, bloody situations or animals getting hurt, maybe it's not the movie for them. For the most part. I mean, I don't think my daughter could watch this movie. Because she's a big animal lover. And she couldn't see animals get hurt. Or even blood, for that matter. The way they kind of show it. They definitely give us Rocket almost dying. We thought Peter was almost going to die. But that was just him drinking. Nebula got really hurt, but she fixed herself. Drax, he got shot with a beam of something from Adam earlier in the movie. We thought he was going to die. Groot, I feel like he already died in the first one. So I think he's a tree. He would have grown back anyways. Mantis is Mantis. She helps when she needs to help. Mantis also story. It also comes full circle from what she started with. Because you got to remember, Ego created her to specifically serve him and live on that planet with Ego. But as also she said towards the end of Guardians 3 was, ever since I was born, the thing I was made to do was follow Ego. And then after Ego died, I've been following the Guardians. And the only thing I've been doing is doing what the Guardians tell me to do. And she's like, I need to go find my own place in this world, in this universe. I need to go out on my own and just learn how to be my own person without following anybody's rules. which I think was awesome. And it's a good rule for any person out there. Like, you may be stuck in this bubble of a world that you live in at the current moment. But at some point, you have to learn how to find yourself outside the bubble that you're in. You need to learn how to be a functioning person in this world. Doesn't mean you can't come back to that bubble. But for a time, at some point in time, you need to come out of your bubble, like your family, and learn how to live life. Cecily, that's what Mantis was doing. Josh is like, no, Josh is like, I'll go with you. Mantis is like, no, man, I gotta do this myself. But you need someone to protect you. He's like, I'll be fine, I can protect myself. And Drax is like, no, but you're puny. Drax is Dave Bautista. I don't even call him Bautista anymore. I call him Dave Bautista now. I'm a wrestling fan, so that's where I knew him from. Is a great character. The great person they added to play Drax the dad. I'm not even calling him Destroyer anymore. Drax the dad. I love it. Every character has been put in position to play. Every person that was hired to play these characters was literally the perfect choice. The perfect choice, the perfect person, everything. And then Peter said he's leaving the Guardians. He's like, I gotta go back home. I haven't been to Earth since I was captured at 8 years old. Like, I don't remember how many years it's been. Probably 20. So either Peter's between 28 and like 36. I'm gonna say. When he returns home to Earth. And it's kind of weird because he does return to Earth. I'm not sure what year it is. And he clearly remembers where his grandfather's house was. Luckily, his grandfather's still alive. He knocks on the door. And he sees a black woman open the door. And he's thinking, I'm sorry, I might have the wrong house. Is da-da-da-da here? And this lady's like, oh, yeah, he's here. And then Peter just starts walking slowly through the house, goes to the back. His grandfather's just reading the paper. And the woman tells him, oh, I forgot the grandfather's first name. I'm going to say Mr. Quill. You have a visitor, kind of thing. And grandfather just looks up. He's like, the grandfather comes in shock. Like, what? Wait, Peter? He's like, oh, shit, it's Peter. And Peter's just like, hi, Grandpa. And they just hug it out. I think it was another cool scene, an emotional scene. But what if the grandfather knew? That was a weird assumption, weird theory. What if the grandfather knew Peter got jacked all these years ago? Just saying. Just theory I thought of literally just now. What if the grandfather knew who the dad was? And was like, yeah, if I could find someone to take this kid or help take this kid. Because obviously Ego paid the Ravagers to steal Peter. But also they never dropped him off though. But anyways, so that's how Peter's story in a way ends. Nebula, again, she helped them save basically a whole bunch of kids, animals, people. She turned over a new leaf, but she goes back with the Ravagers as a whole, completely new, different person. We see Sylvester Stallone back as like the leader or the king of all Ravagers. I think it was kind of cool. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. That was nasty. Yeah, so Gamora comes back a different person. She's definitely has a different mindset. She's definitely seems like she's going to be a lot nicer, but we don't know that yet. So telling Gamora and her story is continuing with the Ravagers. But Zoe Saldana already said, like, I'm done with Gamora. This is the last time I'll ever play her. You know, things always change. You never really know that, but that's what she said. Same thing with Dave Bautista. He said this will be the last time I ever play her. So I'm I'm gonna play him. Sorry. So you'll never see me in Drax again. But again, things can change. I mean, that's a lot of, like, for Drax and Gamora and Nebula, that's a lot of detail you gotta put on somebody. You gotta spend, like, going at, like, 4 in the morning to spend almost 4 hours getting done up like that. That's a lot. That's a lot. Even Nebula. Karen Gillan's character. But, dude, if I didn't see who Karen Gillan or Gillan was, I would never known that was her as Nebula. Oh, my Lord. That's crazy. At least it's always Aldana. Saldana. You know it looks like her. She's just green. But freaking Nebula is like, whoa. Different person. Different character. Let's see. And Nebula is basically now running nowhere. In the sense that she now she's like, I want to make nowhere a place where people can come and, like, live, have a great life. Because now there's so many new people. All these kids have just been moved to nowhere. And then all these animals that are basically from Earth have been moved to nowhere. So now we have to Nebula wants to try and build nowhere into a populace where people can just come and live happily kind of thing. Like she said, she asked, she said, Drax, I need you here. You can't go anywhere. I need someone to help me with these kids because, like I said, you were not meant to be Drax the Destroyer. You were meant to be Drax the Dad. That I think was freaking beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. We also know Groot goes wherever Rocket goes. And basically, also, Peter was like, I may be leaving, but I think, Rocket, you're the new leader of the Guardians. And you'll be a better leader than I ever was. Which, that's, in a way, I get that. I like that. That makes plenty of freaking sense. Plenty of sense, I think. Rocket was, in a way, I feel like, if you really watch the movies, the unofficial leader of the team. Without really being the leader of the team. You know? Rocket said, wait, y'all leaving? Everybody's leaving. Except the only ones that aren't leaving is Nebula, Drax, Groot, and obviously Rocket. Oh, and Kraglin. Kraglin's staying there, too. Also, come back full... I know there's a couple full circle stuff. Coming back to the Kraglin Cosmo thing. So, Kraglin called Cosmo a bad dog because Kraglin was still trying to learn how to do the whistle thing with the spear. He couldn't do it. So Cosmo's like, you'll never be able to do it. You'll never be able to do it. And then Craig's like, oh, you think you can do it better than Cosmo? Cosmo literally does it. It hits like these little markers that were set up in front of them. Perfect. Like, pew, 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 pew. Perfect. And then Crackling tells Cosmo, you're a bad dog. And, you know, I love the fact they dog was like, huh? What? And it was like, take that back, take that back. And throughout the whole movie, Cosmo is bothered by the whole bad dog thing and keeps asking Kraglin to take it back. And there's scenes where, like, they're with other people playing, like, I think playing cards or something like that. And Cosmo brings it up again. And everybody at the table is like, oh, come on, Kraglin, just call it. Come on, just give it up. And Kraglin's like, no, she was a bad dog. Like, and Cosmo's like, oh, that hurts. That hurts. But when the High Evolutionary sends his troops, whatever you want to call them, of people to nowhere to try to destroy nowhere, one, Kraglin finally learns how to use... Because we see Yondu again. So the fact that Michael Rooker came back just in that whole blue getup for one scene to say to Kraglin, use your heart, boy. Use your heart. And you see him. And they do the whole Ravager symbol. Double chest. Double pump to the chest. And then Kraglin's like, he got this. And then he starts whistling and starts killing. Let's be serious. Tell me Kraglin's the one who saved nowhere. Sure, Guardians did the ship thing with High Evolutionary and stuff. But Kraglin's the one who really saved nowhere with that whole whistle of the spear stuff. Like, he just demolish dudes left and right. Oh my god, I thought, yo, that is badass. And then when there was a scene with like one of the bigger evil characters, I forgot what the hell it is, Mutations, was about to attack Kraglin from the back, and Cosmo jumps in front of Kraglin. And actually, I didn't know that Cosmo had like mental abilities that he can pick, she can pick things up with her mind, until earlier when she did the whole spear thing. But then she picks up two rocks on the side, like one on each side of this mutational pig, or warthog, whatever you call it, and smashes the mutation pig. And Kraglin says, "She's a good dog." And Cosmo's like the happiest dog in the world. It was so cool to see. Like, yeah, you did. I knew you loved me, kind of thing. Like, yeah, awesome. And Kraglin, all right, relax. Yeah, I got it. Yeah. That was a cool thing to see. That little story that came around like that. That was awesome. I don't know what other things that were going to come full circle on. I completely forgot. But essentially, like I said, Mantis wants to go become her own person. Peter wants to actually be a human, so to speak. Go home on Earth, actually live the life that he missed with his Earth family, so to speak. Nebula essentially is going to become the leader of a new world. She's nicer. She's happy. Nebula's happier compared to the first time. She's very happy. She doesn't mind creating a new place where people can just come and be happy. Gamora saw what the being a guardian is all about again and realized it's not a bad thing to be part of a family. And telling you, her family is now, in a way, the Ravagers and the Guardians. But I feel like, yeah, that's the most. I mean, I know I'm skipping some things, but I feel like we're almost an hour into this. I didn't want to go over it. It's not easy to talk by yourself for an hour. Especially when you don't script your podcast. You just talk. But yeah, I would love to know what everybody thought. I think this is probably one of the best movies since. I'm not hating on Doctor Strange. I'm not. But I think this is probably the best movie since No Way Home. Right? That was the most recent Spider-Man. Yeah. Excuse me. That was probably the best movie since No Way Home. Easily. And then go to the two post-credit scenes. I feel like there's something missing I was talking about. So, we got two post-credit scenes. I'm going to go right to the last one, and then we're going to cut back to the mid-credit scene. So, the post-post, like after the credits have been done with, we see Peter and his grandfather sitting at the kitchen table. Peter's just eating, looks like he's eating cereal. His grandfather's holding a paper. I love the fact, if you saw the holiday special, you'll know what it means. It says, "Alien Abduction" on the paper. Kevin Bacon tells all. As I'm like, yo, that's funny. That is funny. And after that, they cut out and they say, "The legendary Star-Lord will return." Now, I feel like, in a sense of Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe not. But I feel he has to be a big part of Secret Wars, Kang Dynasty, like that, those key movies. I feel like, because definitely these next movies are definitely more cosmic-based. Because think about it, Guardians is in space, the Marvels are in space, Kang Dynasty is basically going to be in space. I feel like Secret Invasion, the TV show, is kind of loosely based on Earth and space because of the Kree or the Skrull. I can't remember which one. But yeah. And then let's go back. Then let's rewind a little bit too. As the movie ends, everybody, you know, goes in separate ways and stuff. Then they do the extra credit scene. We see, it says we see the new Guardians of the Galaxy. We see Rocket, which we already knew. We don't see Groot yet. We see Kraglin, which I was actually, I'm not surprised that he's a Guardian now. I am, but I'm not. We see Adam Warlock, who I think was really cool. We see him as a very chill character kind of thing. And then we see this little girl that I did not know who she was until I like saw an IGN spoiler thing. I already forgot her name. But I guess she's the daughter of Mar-Vell. M-A-R-V-E-L-L. Or hyphen V-E-L-L. Which technically is the original Captain Marvel. In the comics. That's what I'm saying in the comics. She's the daughter of Mar-Vell. Was the original Captain Marvel. And she's technically considered to be one of the most powerful beings in the cosmic universe. Because if you see, if you watch the trailer, and because they go to protect the planet. From, like, we're Guardians, we got to protect this planet because these people can't protect themselves. And you see these, like, horde of goat, horse-looking things running towards, like, a village in the background or something like that, or a town. And the Guardian's like, oh, here we go. We got to go. And you see this little girl, her hands start lighting up. We're like, oh, wait a second, what? Who is this little girl? And this supposedly, this is either one of the kids that I don't know if High Evolutionary stole and or created. But she got powers, though. But before that, she couldn't even speak any, like, English. Jax was speaking her, like, alien tongue. Alien language. So, but now she can speak perfect English. So I'm like, okay, if they keep this little girl, this actual little girl actress, for the next couple movies, at least she looked like she was maybe 12. She can probably be a major player in the universe for the Kang Dynasty and or Secret Wars, whichever one comes first. But like I said, wait, was Groot? So this whole time you're thinking, everybody's sitting on a rock. But you know who they were sitting on? On Groot. Groot is literally now the size of a freaking, like, I want to say redwood tree, but he's bulked up like a redwood tree. Like, I want to say, jeez, I'm not good with height things. Maybe 20 feet tall. He is bulked up. He's like almost, he's Hulk. That's a good way to put it. He's a little bit bigger than Hulk in tree stature. You know? A little bigger than Hulk. His head is like almost shaped into like a crown almost. It's kind of cool actually. But yo, Groot is ginormous. So telling you right now, the team is Rocket, Kraglin, Adam Warlock, Groot, and the little girl. So again, I don't remember her name, but back to the little girl also. So her dad is supposed to be in the comics, Mar-Vell, the original Captain Marvel, and then she's supposed to be the most powerful, one of the most powerful beings, with her brother, which I don't know if we're ever going to see her brother in the movies. And so she's one of the original founders of the Guardians of the Galaxy, which I did not know that until IGN brought it up. I'm like, oh snap, that's cool, that's very cool. So either they're gonna get a different actress to play her, or they're gonna try to keep this little girl throughout the series. Cause I feel like there's a lot of young, technically Avengers. You know, we got a young Hawkeye. You know, Kate Bishop. We got Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, which could take the mantle essentially of Captain Marvel, just Miss. We got introduced to Hulk's kid. I forgot his name. I feel like an idiot. We got Hulk's kid in the She-Hulk show, at the end of the She-Hulk show. We got Riri Williams now as Ironheart, which is essentially the new Iron Man. So we have actually, they have set up a world perfectly. Oh, and Wanda Maximoff's kids, Scarlet Witch's kids, you know, even though just telling a mental prep, premonition of hers, so to speak. They weren't telling, it was just in her head, but telling other universes that they're real. But you're basically setting up a young Avengers ready. Now, I don't know if that's their plan to keep the Avengers moving forward. Have all these young characters. I guarantee you. Now, yes. Oh, yeah. I want to be in a Marvel movie. But 10, 15 years from now, they might not want to be acting anymore. You know? They might want not have nothing to do with that thing. They might not want to do a Marvel movie anymore. But they do have a good setup to make a Young Avengers movie if they wanted to. So, it was, but to end this all off, it was a great ending to, I feel, a phenomenal three movies. I feel these three movies were better than the Iron Man series. Definitely better than the Thor. If I want to do top five, Avengers obviously is top number one. But if you want, unless we go, it's a team up movie though, in a way. It's a team up movie yet individual movie for each character. Kind of, it's weird. But if you want to go, Avengers is number one. Cap, the three Cap movies, number two. I'm gonna have to say Spider-Man, the three Spider-Man, number three. Guardians, number four. And then the three Iron Man, number five. Right? Yep. And then the three Thors, number six. If I was gonna rate them. So, but I was supposed to end this like 10 minutes ago. But I want to know what everybody thought, man. I thought this was a great finish to a great beginning to an end. I would love to know what they're going to do with the new Guardians. They're going to continue it into like the Kang Dynasty Secret Wars thing. Are they going to just, we're good and done with them? Because, yeah, remember, James Gunn is done. James Gunn's mind is now set on DC projects. He's starting to work on getting people to be in a Superman Legacy movie. So, let's go. See what happens. But let's end this off on a good note. I hope everybody has a great Monday to begin their week. Get your coffee. You need your coffee, your energy drinks. Get yourself a nice lunch, dinner. But y'all know what to do. Hit me up on Twitter, @MellowPod22. Hit me up on twitch.tv/MellowFellowGaming. One word, no spaces. All lowercase, by the way. I don't think I ever say that, but I should start saying that. Hit me up on that Good Pods Podcasting Network. Good Pods is like, what is it, Goodreads? Except for podcasts. It's actually probably one of the best things I've actually used. Go check out Good Pods, for real. And I do have YouTube. I don't really do anything with it as much as I should. And also hit me up on every streaming platform that you have out there. Hit on that Stitcher, on that Apple Podcast, on that Google Podcast, on that Good Pods Podcast, on that Spotify, on that iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Check me on all those streaming platforms. Always and forever, one love, peace.